Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
Well, he's had an incredible tennis career that's taken him around the world. In 1989, as the Berlin Wall came tumbling down, Michael Chang won the French Open, making him, at the ripe old age of 17, the youngest person ever to win a Grand Slam title. You know, at the peak of his career, he could serve a tennis ball at 210 kilometres an hour. He retired in 2003 and will soon be inducted into the International Tennis Hall of Fame. What else has he been up to, though? That's what we'd like to know. What's he doing with his life at the ripe old age of 36 now, being retired? What does he do? Well, Michael Chang joins us now to tell us. Michael Chang, welcome to Open House.
Thank you.
I want to know how fast you can slog a ball these days.
I haven't measured my speed on my serve, but my fastest out on tour was 130 miles per hour. I'm not sure what that is in kilometers per hour. But yeah, I'm still playing quite a bit of tennis. Yeah. And probably a little later on this year, I probably play a little bit on the Champions Tour. I don't know if I'll run into Mr. Rafter or not, but I see Cashy out there playing a little bit. So, yeah, it'll be fun.
Yeah. Well, it's been an interesting life that you've had. And, of course, you know, in your mid-30s, there's so much more to live. But you turned pro at the age of 15. I'm really interested to know, how does a 15-year-old turn pro? What was driving you from the beginning? Was it your own determination? Or was it your parents? Was it your family? What was it?
You know, I think the biggest thing was probably just the love for the game. You know, it's very different now, at least here in the States. You know, a lot of kids and parents, a lot of them have a mentality of going into tennis with the means of thinking about the money or the endorsements and stuff like that. You know, I think I could say, pretty generally speaking, for our generation, which is, you know, myself, Jim Curry, or Pete Sampras, Andre Agassi, I don't think any one of us really went into the intent of necessarily, you know, playing professional tennis and making it on tour and stuff like that. I think we just played because we enjoyed it.
Just loved it.
Just loved the game. My mom was actually the first one to start tennis. My dad picked it up after that. And, you know, on the weekends, we would actually go watch him play all of these company tournaments. And, you know, my mom says, you know, the kids are getting a little bit older. It's great to come out and to watch you play, but why don't you introduce them to a sport that you love and that you take such an interest in? You know, that's really how it got kick-started for us. You know, the Lord really took it to a level that, you know, we certainly didn't imagine. Tennis has definitely been a blessing to us in many, many ways, both on and off the court.
Well, you rose to the second in the world, so it certainly was a blessing, as you say. What role does your family play, though, when you get engrossed in a sport at that young age, at that level, though? I mean, you hear of other families that have to basically put everything on hold when their teenager goes into professional sport. Did that happen for you?
Yeah, my mom actually quit her job to come try with me for the first 4 years of my career. My parents didn't feel too comfortable with a 15, 16-year-old traveling the world and being in all these big cities and different places and different continents by himself. And you know, I know that for me it was really, you know, obviously a very wise decision. But at the same time, my mom and I really experienced a lot of things together out on tour. And we have a very, very close-knit family. So everybody plays a very important role in the success of my career. You know, my dad would handle a lot of the financial things. My brother actually coached me for 12, 13 years on tour.
Right.
My mom played an incredible supporting role. And even my sister-in-law, you know, played a very important role when she came out and traveled on tour and also taking care of things back home for my brother and I. You know, without each person's effort, without each person's, you know, gifts and talents, you know, we certainly would not be able to, you know, have been as successful out there.
Yeah, the success certainly was a Chang family affair, it sounds like. Do you ever regret not doing normal things as a teenager, though? There must have been so much of your time, you know, totally taken up in your sport and in practicing your sport that maybe you missed out on some of those regular things that teenagers do.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of I've been asked that question before, and my answer is kind of strange because I don't really know what normal, quote unquote,
okay,
is. I mean, I could say, you know, yeah, I missed out on maybe going to you know, finishing out my high school years and going to you know, college and stuff like that, and kind of, you know, partaking of the social realm of all of those things. But, you know, then again, the flip side is that, you know, what teenager has an opportunity to have a career at such a young age and get a chance to travel around the world and experience different cultures and meet different people and at the same time really do something that that he really loves.
This is Open House. Michael Chang is our guest. So, Michael, when you won the French Open in 1989, you did become the first American to win the tournament since 1955, and at 17 years of age, the youngest player ever to win a Grand Slam event. How did you actually feel when you won it?
I think that there's a lot of other things that have really made that tournament very special. I mean, it was, people would say, oh, you know, it's about Michael Chang winning the French Open, becoming the youngest male to win a Grand Slam championship. And you know, to some degree on the outside, you know, it could very easily, you know, have been that. But I think that if people were to really understand, you know, what happened, you know, during those couple of weeks there in Paris, I think that they would gain a much bigger and broader perspective on that victory. Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned the Berlin Wall, you know, going down at that particular time, but, you know, also the crackdown in Tiananmen Square actually happened the middle Sunday of the French Open.
Right, yeah.
And my mom and I weren't out there playing, you know, matches or practicing. We were glued to the television set, you know, watching the news and watching the events unfold there in Beijing. And, you know, certainly it was a very frightful time. We felt very sad for, you know, a lot of the lives that were lost there in Tiananmen. And, you know, in many ways gained a lot of courage from, you know, a lot of those students just, you know, standing up for what they believe in. You know, the last four matches for me were really played on inspiration. You know, my match with Yvonne Lendl in the round of 16 is a match that I certainly should not have won. You know, Yvonne is ranked number one in the world. Lost the first two sets, came back, you know, won the next three. Then to play, you know, Stefan Edberg in the finals after struggling through the quarterfinals and semifinals, you know, is also a really big upset. You know, Stefan was ranked number three, down two sets to one in the match, and saved maybe 11 break points in the fourth set, and then ended up winning it in five. And, you know, I think that when I look back upon something like that, it's really kind of a fairy tale story. You can't script something like that. You know, as I had looked back upon the events that happened, I realized that, you know, God's purpose, I think, in really allowing me to win was to put a smile upon Chinese people's faces around the world during a time when there wasn't a whole lot to smile about. You know, in the end, I had an opportunity to address the Parisian crowd, but at the same time get a chance to address really the world and be able to say, you know, God bless each and every one of you, especially those in China. You wanted to celebrate during that time, but at the same time it was difficult too, because you know a lot of lives were lost. But that's really the, you know, I think the real reason why I was allowed to win the French.
Yes. Michael, anybody who doesn't even need to follow tennis will certainly know that you're a very, very strong Christian, very passionate about your faith. In fact, it was probably back at the French Open that I think you first addressed the crowd and said that you thanked Jesus Christ for the win. How did that faith begin? I'm really interested to know. I know that it actually started fairly early. In fact, around about the time when you turned pro, back at the age of 15, isn't it?
Yeah, actually, I came to know the Lord my rookie year in 1988, and you know, I'm actually very thankful for the timing, because you know, I think in coming to know the Lord during that period of time, before, you know, the tournament titles, which was before the French Open, which was before, you know, all the fame and all of the money, it gave me a proper perspective on life, and gave me a proper perspective on why I was out there playing. You know, I recognize the fact that, you know, God gives each and every one of us talents and gifts, but those gifts are really to be used to serve others. They're really to be used to bless others. They're to be used to touch and impact lives. You know, for me, in knowing that, it was easier to be a little more grounded and not let all of those things kind of, you know, sway my lifestyle or my way of thinking. So
And how did it happen, though, Michael? I mean, what was the turning point for you at the age of 15? Who spoke to you? How did it happen?
I actually grew up in a Christian home. I went to church a fair amount when I was young, but I really didn't make that decision until I was about 15, until that rookie year. And you know, unfortunately, the church that I went to didn't really have a youth group, didn't really have a Sunday school. So it was tough when you're that young to sit in the sanctuary and really understand and comprehend all of the things that were talked about. I had one opportunity where I went to go visit my grandparents up in Thousand Oaks, went to their church. Actually, my grandfather helped found that church, and there was an elderly lady speaking at that particular weekend, and she was incredibly funny, very, very engaging, and and even to this day, I still remember exactly what she talked about. Hmm. That's how much it touched my life and touched my heart. Hmm. And after that, I started to think about life. I started to start to have a lot of questions about what's my purpose here on Earth. And my grandparents had given me a student Bible a little while back, and they wanted me to read it every day. And I said, okay, I'll read it every day. I kind of put it up on the bookshelf. But after that particular sermon, I was lying in bed thinking about all those things, and I saw my Bible. I said, hey, this might be an opportunity to see what the Bible's all about, what it really has to say about life. And when you're 15, you look up subjects like love, you look up subjects like friendship, and mm-hmm. And all of these different things, and for me, it was like, wow, what the Bible has to say about all these things is not only right, but it's true, and this is all really good stuff. And so from there, I made it a habit, really, every night to look up something new, started to see things happening in my own life that I knew were not by coincidence, started to read about Jesus' life, and after a while, your faith just grows. You just have so many things happening, and you just can't deny the fact that God is working in your life, has been working in your life, and he has a plan for your life.
And the rest is history, as they say. I think back to the French Open and when you did actually publicly thank Jesus for your win, and I don't think that's been the first time at all. You were criticized a lot, and people said, well, you shouldn't be bringing your beliefs into the sport and all that kind of thing. If you had your time to do it again, would you still do the same thing?
I wouldn't change anything. They had asked me an honest question. They asked me, well, why were you able to win today's match against Yvonne Lundell? And I said, well, to be honest with you, under the circumstances for me being, very fatigued, I was cramping very severely. And really the only reason I was able to win is because the Lord gave me strength today. Hmm. I don't think that's necessarily should be offensive to anyone. I'm just telling what's in my heart and what I believe to be true. And you're right. The next day, I just got absolutely hammered in the press. It was a shock for me because I'm 17 years old. I've never experienced that before. Mm. People coming out and saying words that are that harsh. And for the next three matches, actually a few years that I would play in Paris, the crowd would really be against me.
Really?
Last three matches I played in Paris, I'd walk out to the crowd, onto the court, and I would get jeered, I would get booed, and we'd warm up, and every time my opponent would hit a shot, they would go, yay. Every time I would hit a shot, they would go, boo. It was a very trying time, but I tell you, when you go and you stand up for the Lord, the Lord stands up for you. I learned a lot of great lessons. We have another event that we play in the fall, actually, an indoor event, and I remember talking to my dad after one of the matches, and I told my dad, I don't really want to play here in Paris anymore. I don't enjoy it. They just keep jeering me and they boo me, and I don't really want to play here anymore. And so my dad says, Michael, God hasn't called you to be comfortable in your life. You need to go where you've been called. And for this week here in Paris, this is where all the players play, and it's something that you need to go through, something that you need to learn from. Hmm. And that really kind of helped me to take a little bit of a different perspective. And the really, really cool thing is that over the next few years, I got a chance to know the French people better. They got a chance to know me better. And now the last 5 years that I had played out on tour, it's gotten to the point now where I walk on the court and they cheer as if I'm French. It's amazing.
What a turnaround in fortunes.
It is unbelievable.
So, Michael, if you were to throw it into a sentence now with what you've experienced and how your faith impacts everything that you do, how would you define success? Do you have a sentence you could give me?
I think that success is taking the talents that you've been given, using it to go out and glorify the Lord, who is the one who has given you the talent in the first place. And, our lives here on this earth are not to be used for our own glory. People will forget, great shots. They'll forget great wins. They'll forget great victories. But when you touch a person's life, particularly for Christ, it will stay with them throughout this lifetime and hopefully even beyond that. Our time here on earth is short, and it's our job to really go out and to love others, certainly to love ourselves, to love friends, to love family, to love people, but most of all, to go out and to love God. That's the way we were made. We're made to love and to be loved. you know, when all comes down to it, you know, in your last days, you're not going to be asking how much money did I make in my life, or, you know, what accomplishments or trophies did I have in my career, but you're going to be asking for the people that loved you and the people that you love to be around you.
Michael Chang is our guest on Open House. Michael, tell me about the Chang Family Foundation, which now takes up the majority of your time, I believe.
Yeah, we do a lot of fun things, actually. We take various sports, namely basketball, volleyball, and tennis, and we do a lot of outreach programs, a lot of tennis leagues and volleyball leagues and basketball leagues. Up in Seattle, we partner with probably about maybe 12 or 15 churches. And, you know, sports ministry is something that's a little bit more difficult for some churches to pull together. I think part of that is because a lot of pastors are already have their hands full with a lot of other different ministries. And sports sometimes tends to get put to the side a little bit. A lot of the sports ministries tend to be, okay, let's make it every Wednesday we'll play pickup basketball. You know, guys show up, they play basketball, and they go home, but it's not really a ministry or an outreach. And, you know, so for us as a foundation, it's our goal to put together the leagues. We bring in professional referees. We train our captains and co-captains how to lead their team, how to share with their team. And we really, really encourage fellowship and camaraderie and teamwork. And even though it is a competition that we do play, we give a lot better awards and gifts to, you know, prizes like, you know, most inspirational players, for example. We really put an emphasis upon, you know, attitude and sportsmanship and teamwork. And we do it over probably about a 9 to 10 week season, playing probably like once a week, and it's been great.
And are you doing much tennis yourself personally? Like, are you coaching or doing anything specifically tennis-related when it comes to the Chang Foundation?
Yeah, I have been coaching a little bit on tour, on the women's tour. I worked a little bit with Peng Shuai last year, and worked a little bit this year with a former two-time NC2A champion out of Stanford. And you know, I'm actually going to probably you know, play a little bit more, you know, myself. And you know, we have been looking to actually do some things a little bit more tennis specific, as far as, you know, some of the young professionals and some of the top juniors. We were going to do something in China, but that kind of fell through. So, you know, I feel like that's something that the Lord has placed upon my heart, because I certainly have a heart for China.
Yeah.
And I would love to be able to raise the level of tennis there.
Mm. Michael, your own personal goal setting, has that changed since you were, you know, in the pro circuit when it came to tennis, you know, since you've retired? How does that affect your goal setting personally?
You know, the goal really hasn't changed. The ways in which going about doing it has. When I was out there playing out on tour, you know, my witness would really be, you know, my racket. It would be my racket. It would be opportunities that I had to share with the press. You know, being able to go out and to touch lives and impact lives that way. After I retired, you know, I did a little bit more with my voice and a little bit more of a personal manner, speaking to young people or to universities or conferences or youth groups, you know, to my testimony, you know, that type of thing. I did go to a seminary for about a year and a half at Talbot, which was wonderful. I got a chance to meet some great people, got a chance to be stretched and learned a lot. And now it's you know, it continues to be the same, but it's through the foundation. It's still through tennis, through sports. You know, you hope that the light and salt that the Lord gives you, you know, will be a good witness. We still go out and try to give our opponents as much love as we possibly can. It's just a little bit different in the tennis court versus off the tennis court.
While you're slogging 210 kilometer an hour balls at them.
But you know, but it's funny, because at the same time, you know, if you know, you go out and you play your best, you give your best, and you know, if you're able to go out and be players, six love. I mean, they respect you for it, and believe it or not, people see that you give your 100% in practice. They see you give your 100%. You know, when you're out there playing, and that can be applied to anyone's career. You know, people respect you for it. You know, it's a witness as well.
Well, congratulations also on your induction into the International Tennis Hall of Fame. Of course, you'll be inducted in July, but congratulations as that is pending. A wonderful honor as well.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, Michael Chang, thank you so much for your time. It's been great talking to you.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and mchang.com is where you can find out more about Michael, what he's up to these days, and particularly the and Michael Chang Family Foundation, mchang.com.
We hope you enjoy this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.